8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is a special Meet the People for October the 27th, 2010. My guest is Scott McAdams, the U.S. Senate nominee of the Democrats in Alaska. Mr. McAdams came on the program about a month ago, and we wanted to have him back with Election Day now just 6 days away. Mr. McAdams is a former mayor of Sitka, Alaska. Well, with that introduction, welcome back to the airwaves of Sandpoint, King Cove, and Cold Bay.
Hey, Kels, thanks for having me back on.
All right. Well, Mr. McAdams, let me start by asking you a pretty simple question. How will things be different if you and other Democrats win big on Election Day versus if the Republicans win big on Election Day?
I tell you, I think what will be different for Alaska is that we'll have somebody in the United States Senate who speaks the language of rural Alaska, who recognizes the unique needs of small towns in our state, villages in our state, who recognizes that we are a young state, an infrastructure-poor state, a place where there's still a case to be made before a national audience that we need to be invested in. We need to have our public works infrastructure developed. We need reliable transportation, affordable energy, an educated populace so that we have a baseline and a foundation to build our economy in the 21st century.
Okay, I have Scott McAdams. He is the Democrat in the Alaska U.S. Senate race on the radio. If you want to call in and ask a question on the air, you can do so by dialing in at 383-2163. Again, that number is 383-2163. Mr. McAdams, the last time we spoke, you said that you were rather a unique breed of Democrat, more of an Alaskan, shall we say, than a Democrat. Not your exact words, but I think that's a pretty good paraphrasing of what you said. Is it a fairly accurate perception of who you are and your political ideology?
Well, I think that's fair to say. I think that we all ought to put state before party. And, you know, the thing about Alaska is we're a natural resource state, in particular our not just oil and gas, but also fisheries. I mean, it's important that we have somebody in the United States Senate who recognizes that we do have unique needs here. We do have a unique perspective in this state that ought to be championed in the United States Senate. You know, I think Alaska is an abstraction to a lot of people. We're such a big place. It's hard for folks to comprehend, how diverse we are, how geographically separate we are in our different regions. You know, this whole business of being an Alaskan Democrat, I'm not sure exactly what that means. What I know is that to be pro-gun in Alaska is like being pro-outboard motor or pro-shopping cart. I mean, that's a tool that we use to gather our sustenance, our food. Some of the other national hot-button issues, I mean, certainly we'll bring an Alaskan perspective to Washington, D.C.
Okay. With that being said, are you a supporter of the Obama administration and its often liberal policies?
Well, you know, there are certainly things that I support the administration on, that I support the president on. I think we were in a position in Afghanistan where under George Bush we had a policy of counterterrorism where we had a very light presence there. Our whole means and business there was attacking and capturing a terrorist. But that vision was not leading us toward victory. I think the Obama administration has actually been more effective in that regard with new policy aimed more at counterinsurgency. When I look at the Obama administration, I think it's important that we do recognize we also have differences. I think that in a young state like Alaska, in a state where we still aren't developed, it's important we have somebody that's willing to stand up to the administration. Especially on matters like transportation, where I think the Obama administration has been too urban-centric in its view in the reauthorization of Safety Lou. I think we need to have people in Washington, D.C. who can make the case, even within the Democratic caucus, that rural areas matter, that rural communities matter, and that we need transportation investment, too.
Mr. McAdams, just trying to get a window into your financial thinking here. Congress is expected to debate a tax increase after Election Day. And if Congress does not act swiftly before the new year, millions of hardworking middle-class Americans will start paying more in federal taxes. Now, if this Congress does not act, which is a possibility, I think, would you support retroactive legislation to make whole those Americans who are forced to pay more in federal taxes during some sort of an interim period?
Kells, I think that your premise that you're operating off there is incorrect. When you take a look at the Bush tax cuts, I'm all for putting money in the hands of the middle class. I mean, we've had a tax policy over the last 30 years that's favored the richest 1% of America's multimillionaires. I've taken a look at allowing the tax cuts to expire for people who make over $250,000 a year. I think it is equitable. I'll fight to continue the tax cuts for the middle class. But, you know, in this country, prior to 1980, corporations paid for 40% of the cost of doing government. They now pay for 7% of the cost of doing government. I think we've had millionaires in the United States Senate doing the bidding of billionaires for far too long, and I think that the time for that to end is now.
Okay, if you want to call into the program and ask Mr. McAdams a question on the air, you can do so by dialing 383-2163. Going back to the question of what you call the possible end to the Bush-era tax cuts, if those do expire, as is presently scheduled to happen, middle-class Americans will pay more in federal taxes, something the president promised when he was campaigning for the Oval Office would not happen under his watch. So would you vote to keep tax cuts in place for the middle class?
Yes, I would vote to keep tax cuts in place for the middle class and allow them to expire for people who make more than $250,000 a year. And that's exactly what the administration has proposed that the Congress do.
Okay, Mr. McAdams, I realize you only have a few short moments with us, but we appreciate you being on the air. I want to ask you a question about fishing out in rural Alaska. The fishing season that has just concluded in Sandpoint and King Cove and elsewhere in the Aleutians was a really tough one for many salmon fishermen. If you go to Washington, D.C. after Election Day, what can we expect you to do to make it better for salmon fishermen in Alaska?
Well, thank you for the question. First of all, I begin by saying that I learned to read, write, and reason in a community of 3,000 people in southeast Alaska in the town of Petersburg, where 85 cents on the dollar comes from commercial fishing. I've worked on deck. I've longlined. I've seined in Kodiak and in southeast Alaska. And I believe that commercial fisheries are just a critically important economic sector in our state's economy. I also believe it's part of our culture. I believe commercial fishing is a lifestyle that's part of Alaska's identity. And as Alaska's next United States Senator, I'll bring those values, I'll bring that perspective with me to Washington, D.C. I know that out in your region, the issue of trawler bycatch is a significant one. Of course, as it relates to fish policy, I think that, you know, the Magnuson-Stevens Act endowed us with the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. We do have the ability now to make sound scientific decisions to help drive our policy as opposed to just strictly economic ones. But, you know, I do have the perspective and maybe even the bias of a deckhand. I do have the perspective and maybe even the bias of someone who believes in locally owned Alaskan-owned operations. I mean, granted, we have the Interstate Commerce Clause as a matter of federal law. There's only so much we can do to make sure that our fisheries actually enrich our communities. But I will bring that perspective to the United States Senate.
Okay. Mr. McAdams, just a few more questions, three to be exact. Many, especially in state media outlets, both public and private, say the Alaska Senate race is tightening. The likes of CNN tend to agree, but a report published just yesterday by Newsweek questions that. What do you think? Is the race tightening? And if so, why is it getting closer?
Well, I just saw polling data today that has the undecideds in Alaska increasing from 6% up to 13%. Just saw a poll today that has this race at 30, 28, 26. So, you know, I believe that that this race is wide open, and that's what I've been saying all along. I mean, Alaska is a difficult place to poll. There's no question about that. I mean, there was a time in August when people believed that Joe Miller was down 30 percentage points to Lisa Murkowski in the primary. 30 percentage points. Well, there's less than 2 percentage points between each candidate in this race. So, you know, what I'm encouraging voters to do is to go out and vote their values. I mean, if you are a person who believes that the Tea Party Express and their view of the world is what's right for Alaska, I would disagree with that perspective, but I'd encourage people to vote that way. If you believe that Lisa Murkowski can win a writing campaign, which I don't believe that she can, I'd encourage you to vote that way. But if you believe, if you consider yourself a moderate person, a person that recognizes that Social Security is a promise that we should keep to our seniors, a person who doesn't believe that Senator Murkowski should have voted to cut Medicare four times over the last 3 years, then I'd encourage you to take a look at the McAdams campaign. And the way that folks can do that is they can look at our website, www.scottmcadams.org. Would also encourage your listeners to take a look at Lisa Murkowski's voting record at lisavotes.com.
Okay, Mr. McAdams, hopefully people got all that information. If they did not, they can go back to our website and listen to an archived broadcast of this conversation. The focus has been during the race on Joe Miller and Lisa Murkowski, principally. But in recent weeks, your campaign has raised well over $1 million. And in late June of this past summer, you guys had a paltry sum in comparison to what you now have cash on hand. Why is the race getting closer between Miller and Murkowski seeming to help your candidacy move forward?
You know, again, the premise of your question, I'm not sure what you're getting at, but Kells, I'll tell you this: we're working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and have since the 25th of August. You know, I guess that being from a small town in Alaska, the ethos of hard work and getting out and meeting as many voters as we absolutely can is just what we're doing, and that's why you're seeing us raising the polls. Far too many in the media have been fascinated with the drama of Joe Miller's personal life and Lisa Murkowski's writing campaign. For us, it's about Alaska. It's about Alaskan communities. It's about Alaskan towns. It's about putting forward a vision that moves forward all 300 of our small towns in Washington, D.C. So, hey, Kells, I really appreciate talking with you today. Would send my best to the folks out in the Peninsula and Aleutians region. And thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, thanks. Good luck in the race, and we'll be watching.
That's
Scott McAdams here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP. If he should pull out a victory in the U.S. Senate race in Alaska, it'll be the first time since the 1960s that Democrats have held both of Alaska's U.S. Senate seats. Well, that was just a quick update from the Scott McAdams campaign. We'll now go back to the music here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, and then to the national news from NPR in Washington, D.C. at the top of the hour.